You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, listeners. It's me, Jinx Monsoon, here for another episode of Hi, Jinx, with me, Jinx Monsoon. Today, we have a thoroughly enjoyable episode. My friend Brandon Rogers is staying at my house, Monsoon Manor, and we talk about what it's like having a straight following when you're a queer comedian. What's up with that? Hunker down and sink your teeth into some Hi, Jinx, with special guest Brandon Rogers.
Forever Dog.
Everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, I am here with a YouTube celebrity, a gay meme, a presenter at the Streamies, and an all-around delightful person. It's Brandon Rogers. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Jinx.
This is a very unique episode of Hi, Jinx, because you're actually in my house with me right now.
I mean, not only in your house, I believe I'm in the drag room.
Yeah, it looks like a... what did I just say?
It looks like a whore exploded. A hooker.
A hooker exploded.
A hooker.
A hooker.
A hooker exploded in
Anyone
walls.
Can be a whore. It takes
It takes
work.
Gusto to be a hooker.
It takes gusto. Chutzpah.
Chutzpah. Honest work.
So it's kind of funny to be like sitting side by side facing the same direction.
It's like we're on a roller coaster. Roller coaster.
And that's
of
exactly what my podcast is like. We could go anywhere right now.
Oh yes.
But let's start with the basics.
All
now,
right.
For anyone who doesn't know you, mm-hmm. How would you describe your career and what you do?
I'm just a class clown who took the easiest opportunity to get viewership in the time period that I wanted to do. Like I think. Like 30 years ago, if I did, you know, I probably would have been like a public access star of some kind. And I don't know, in the future, maybe, you know, I would have been a hologram, one of the newbies, you know, one of the first hologram stars. But right now, YouTube was the easiest monkey bar or the easiest rung on the ladder to grab. So, yeah, I love, you know, like you, like performing stories and telling a story through comedy and theatricality. And so YouTube is just the greatest audience that I've been able to find. But now I'm dabbling in TikTok and Instagram and finding new territories. I've been dabbling in animation with you.
You are dabbling a lot.
Didn't dabble here and there. A little lick, a little squirt.
If anyone is unfamiliar with your work, uh-huh. Would you call it sketch comedy? Would you call it character-driven story
yeah.
moments?
Yeah, character. It's a little bit John Watersy in the sense that all of his films are very character driven, but they all have the absurdity of sketch comedy. And yeah. I think I call it sketch comedy because most of my videos have a three act structure. So it is like a sketch, you know, mm-hmm. written with a beginning, a middle, and an end. But it is heavily driven by the absurdity of the character and the universe that they immediately create around them. You know, every character, I have to not only create the costume and the look, but I have to paint the world that they live in. So like Helen, you know, she's oftentimes in a very administrative, you know, school kind of environment. And then Mom, you know, she's in suburbia, whereas like the CEO's in the White House or in like a corporate building. So every time I do a new character, it's a whole new, not just sketch, but a whole universe we have to create. And it keeps it fresh every time. And I get to work with so many different brilliant creative people because it's a different universe each time. So I get to, you know, easily write in friends and people like you and play. I think you've been like three or four different people on.
I played President Queen in Blame the Hero.
And then you were the
Melora.
Melora. Oh, was it? Maybe it's just two characters. I thought there was a third one that I had you play.
I think that's it so far. But then we've also worked together on Hell of a Boss.
Hell of a Boss. You were a wonder in the pilot. You were, we both were in the pilot.
I was the murder mom of the murder family.
Yes.
Martha.
Yes, Martha. Which, funny enough, I knew you were playing Martha, but for some reason, the first time I saw it, I didn't register that it was you.
Yeah, and Mara Wilson plays the teacher in that. And what a strange mashup of different people. Like, we've got Brandon Rogers, and I always refer to your YouTube fame, but you also had a full-blown TV show.
Oh, my God. That's how you found me, I think, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I found
you.
The
show Magic Funhouse, the pilot's available on YouTube, which I highly suggest everyone go check out the pilot right away. And then if you want to watch the rest of the season, you can see it on VRV.
VRV, yeah, that's the app that it's on. It's honestly, it was like 2 years of my life spent on a project that most people don't. It's like most of my fans know the least about that project, and so.
But it's what brought you into my life, and I was very grateful when I found it's like super queer. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is how I explained it to people because it's kind of a show about a bunch of really scary, awful people, but they find a chosen family in each other.
Yeah.
And they're the underdogs trying to make it in a dog-eat-dog world.
And with the chosen family comes chosen arguments. And you have, you know, you still have all the bad qualities of a family. The whole cast is a big fan of you. I remember that because I think Jennifer Shemke was the one who said, oh my gosh, you know, Jinx watches the show. And then I found out that you not only watched the show, we were in the, you know, I think it was like through season two, you watched it.
Oh, I watched every episode that was available. I think I got the streaming platform just to continue watching your show.
Oh my God.
And then when I was talking up your show to Willem one day, she said, oh yeah, I've never seen it, but there was a billboard for it outside my studio for like a month. So I know exactly who you're talking about.
I'm very flattered that Willem had to look at my face for a month. That's very...
Magic Funhouse is a show where Brandon plays a children's TV show host.
Yes.
But he's also a bit of an emotionally stunted sociopath.
And justifiably, I think. Yeah, and yes, he is. He was in a coma for most of his life, you know, from I think about 7 or so years old all the way up until in his 20s. And so, you know, in a way, it was representative of how I felt at the time, because at that time, when I was writing Magic Funhouse, my YouTube career was just, it was the equivalent to you like on Drag Race when mm-hmm. things are really starting to take a shift and you're noticing, oh my gosh, I have this new audience now. And I kind of felt like I could authentically start living my life as myself. I was working corporate jobs that whole time. And, you know, when YouTube, you know, and Magic Funhouse took off, I felt like I was getting all my like years of youth back to me. And I felt like I felt kind of cheated because I spent so much of my life doing the corporate route. And so in a way, Arlo, the character on Magic Funhouse, represents, you know, when I was going, you know, the coma represents me working in corporate America. And I just, how I felt like I just missed out on so many cool young years of my life. And then I'm suddenly given a TV show like Arlo is given a TV show when he wakes up from the coma. And and it's like, well, and that kind of makes, you know, his anger is a little representative of my frustration of like, God damn it. I could have been like being fun and cool and creative this whole time. And I was like sucking dick at a law firm for so many years. So he's just a more theatrical version of myself. He's just a more dramatic version.
He's your drag. He's your Jinx Monsoon.
He's my Jinx Monsoon. And I have a few Jinx Monsoons. I have a few people that represent a part of me that is very real, but not if I ever inhibited that part of myself too much, I would be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to let it breathe a little. Otherwise it festers inside of you.
Yeah.
If I didn't let Jinx out, she'd probably like become a tumor.
She'd find a way out or a way to publicly humiliate you. A tumor on your forehead. Yeah. Just like, that's where she'd pop out.
No, I'm thinking more like if I didn't let Jinx out, she'd become some kind of like stomach ulcer and like suck me in. She'd find a way to trade places with me, I think. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It would be like Chucky. It would be like Chucky transfer. And I'm the Chucky doll.
I know. She's like your Cruella.
She is.
We watched
that movie together the other night.
I was thinking how much fun I've had since I've been here. For those of you who don't know, I've been staying at Jinx's house for a few days. And first night we get here, we watched Cruella. And then last night we watched Girls Will Be Girls. And I'm thinking, these are such great movies. And I get to watch them with such great people. I don't have a lot of friends who appreciate these kind of movies as much as I do.
High camp.
High camp, just gay absurdity.
Gay absurdity.
That's how I like, because everyone can be absurd, and I love gay comedy that does absurdity really well, because then I feel like a lot of straight audiences eat it up because the comedy speaks so loud, they don't care what they're watching. They're just like, oh, that was funny. And I feel like Girls Will Be Girls is such a good movie that can wrangle in such a diverse audience, you know?
So Magic Fun House ran for 2 seasons.
Sorry. I don't care if you leave that in. I took a hit when I pause. I didn't get all the coughs out. Sorry. Okay, I'm good. Magic Fun House.
Magic Funhouse ran for 2 seasons, all the while were you continuing to do YouTube videos tandem?
I wish I had done them more. I wish I had evened out. If I had managed my time better, I think I would have really gotten further during that time period. At any given point, I'm always, because of that, I'm always trying to ask myself, could I be doing more? In a few years from now, am I going to look back at this point in time and think I wasn't doing enough? Because Magic Funhouse, I felt like I was not doing enough.
How did you? It was a full blown TV show.
But the thing is, because the way everything was structured back then, it was designed to be exclusively for a platform. Mm. Everyone was coming out with these platforms and throwing a lot of money into series and making it exclusive. I was excited that I was doing a big project, but it was for such a limited audience. Mm-hmm. And part of me felt like, well, I'm putting a lot of time and effort into something that isn't getting a lot of views. And meanwhile, my YouTube channel was starting to plateau. It was starting to, you know, the success that was ramping up on my YouTube channel started to die away when I got the TV show. You know, it's usually a great success to get a TV show, but in this case, it felt like a hindrance because it was taking away from something that was very public and that everyone had access to watch. And then all my time and energy was going into something that very few people, you know, had access to. And so that's where I felt like, oh, I should have just kind of watered the YouTube plant a little bit more during that time period and just made sure that all my stuff was, you know. But even back then, I mean, I didn't even have a lawyer. I didn't have anything. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, you know.
But your YouTube channel is like off the hook. So I don't think you're talking about like, oh, I could have been doing more and getting it further. But it's like you got there and you did the TV show, because your YouTube channel, your videos are in like the 6 millions of views. Oh, like,
let me tell you, I got there the day that you showed up on set. That's when I made it. And that was you played the Queen, President Queen,
yes. In an alternate
Alternate timeline
where America never gained its independence. So it's available on YouTube. It was very topical for the time to have a narcissistic orange-haired asshole as the president.
That was a conscious choice. And then I had you play Melora Oswald and my mother, and you played a very abusive, but albeit lovably abusive mother. I loved editing the scenes of you berating me. And when you get offended on the couch, there's a moment where I say something mean to you and you go, oh, it's so funny because it's not even that offensive what I say.
Yeah, it's like, it's no you.
Yeah. Oh, like, well. Oh, well. it's always so much fun hanging out here. I always, Portland is such a like nicer alternative universe to LA. It's like, it makes me so happy that places exist where people are friendly and smoke weed and the air is clean and there's trees everywhere.
And there's trees and there's green stuff.
Yeah.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
I want to know, what was your first YouTube video? What was the very first YouTube video?
The very first thing I ever... technically it was for Little Miss Sunshine did a... do you remember that movie, Little Miss Sunshine?
Yeah, I like that
did
movie.
They did a contest right around the start of when YouTube came out.
Tony Collette?
Tony Collette, God bless her. I love that woman so much. And they said, do a video with filming your dysfunctional family. And so I made a little sketch about me and my dog at the time, Isabel. And I did a sketch where I just don't get along with her. And I hate living with her. And it was this cute little thing where, like, it was just like a 2-minute little video of me and my dog. But then I found out that, oh, that was easy to cut together to edit. And then you start seeing the comments, people going, oh, ha, 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 that's funny. Ha. And that makes you feel really good.
You get drunk on the attention,
and then it's just a domino effect. And then you're like, well, you know, and then my number one goal is like, well, let me try and be funny. And I back then I was such a stupid teenager. I didn't know what was funny or what wasn't. But I think over the years you kind of learn, this is what audiences like, this is what I like, this is who I am, this is what they want. And
when you create from a place of truth, I think it's easier to find people who resonate with that truth, and then it draws them in as very loyal audiences right away. You know, I think, my first big show that I did with Major Scales was The Vaudevillians, which is a show we worked on consistently, you know, over the last decade. And
you see the longevity of your relationship on stage. It really shows. It's a very seamless, comfortable act every time you perform.
We know each other inside and out at this point, and that's for once not a sex euphemism. So that show is fully artifice. You know, it's completely just like two characters we made up, a story we made up, and any truth that gets in there is by accident. But when we started writing from a place of like, just what do we actually really just find funny, and what things happened in my life that can have a comedic spin put onto it. And then I think that's when I really started creating the work that that I like doing best and that my audiences relate to and resonate with the most. Do you like all these buzzwords, resonate, relate to?
Well, you know, they say write what you know. And there's and every year I learn what that means a little more. I think every year my videos speak truer and truer to my thoughts and feelings, and I start to get more comfortable you know, to get in, and I'm in therapy, not because I'm going through some shit, but you know, it's just a thing. It's a good, and my therapist is always like, well, whenever you feel sad or whenever you feel, it's always just make it a video. Yeah. That's what he tells me. Make it a video, channel it into something you love doing. And I think by doing that, it is always truer and truer. I'm getting more okay with, okay, you know, that was a bad experience, but that would be funny if the bad experience went like this, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And then in that regard, whenever I make a video from something that was negative, it feels like I take control over it and it, or I take power over the thing that was bothering me because now I made it work for me.
Heard. I have to make sure that I'm past what I'm dealing with so that the emotions aren't still raw.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's more having to do with live entertainment. Like, I feel like with video work, I could be working on something like you're saying, like take something that happened to me 2 days ago, turn it into a video, and if it triggers an emotional breakdown, we'll just edit it out, you know? Yeah. Or edit it poignantly.
Poignantly, yes.
But I wouldn't be able to do that in front of a live audience. So I have to wait until after a few sessions with right. the therapist before I can channel it into my work. But I do really enjoy taking things from my life, like like being hit by a car in Amsterdam.
Oh my
That's
God.
A whole monologue.
How hard were you hit by the car?
Very hard.
Holy
but I was
shit.
So drunk and I didn't see it coming at the time. I mean, I was so drunk at the time and I didn't see the car coming.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
my body didn't brace for it. So it just went like a limp rag
well,
doll.
That's probably better that you didn't
Absolutely.
Lock up.
It's probably why I didn't break my leg. I stood back up right after I was hit by a car.
Did you go over the hood or like over? Like
it was the back of the car. It was driving backwards down a street.
Oh, shit.
Like just ridiculously fast for a little you know, the street it was driving down, and it was driving backwards and it hit my body and I kind of like went flying over the back of the car and rolled over it and then flopped on the ground and then it whipped around and then sped off in that direction. So it just hit my body and ran.
It had to be drunk or something.
But it was in front of a bunch of people. Like,
holy
it was
shit.
Right outside of a pub and my hotel. I was crossing the street and I had stopped to wave to some fans.
So this was after Drag Race?
This was well
this
after
last
Drag
week.
Race. This was this was on one of my rare vacations.
Okay.
And I normally, when I take time for honest God vacation, yeah. I go to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I think for obvious reasons. but anyway, it finally found its way into one of my shows, you know, years later. Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel able to talk about it in a very fun, like, oh, I was hit by a car, but luckily I was so drunk. I walked away unscathed, but also I wouldn't have gotten hit by that car if I hadn't been
right.
so drunk and not paying attention as I crossed the city street, you know?
Glass half full or half empty.
It's a catch-22 you know?
It's a catch-22
situation,
yeah.
but...
That's so crazy. I didn't know that. I didn't know you got hit and flew over a car like that. That's insane.
I've actually been hit by a lot of cars in my life, but that was the first one that was like just my body being hit by a car. Usually I had a bicycle to buffer
right.
or another car
another
around
car around
me.
Your body. This was just you barebacked the fucking injury.
I got ramrodded by this.
oh my God. Well, I'm so glad you're okay.
I am too. You know, honestly, every year I'm just, you know, I don't celebrate my birthday as a celebration of me. I celebrate my birthday as a celebration that I'm not dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's equally a great way of, that's actually probably a better mindset to have.
Like I made it another year. Let's take a moment to acknowledge that.
I'm still kicking. Yeah. Holy shit. Well,
Don't mind me. I'm just going to direct us back to you.
I don't mind.
I know you're one of those people who likes to flip the interview around on the other person.
I do.
Like, I need half a reason to go off on another monologue about myself. Now, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but it's Pride Month.
Yes.
And the
God.
Beginning of Pride Month. We start seeing the Brandon Rogers memes.
Move,
from
I'm
some,
gay.
From, that was fairly early work for you, right?
It was. That was right before my YouTube channel really took off.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the last video I made before my YouTube channel really saw big numbers.
Do you think it contributed to that?
I think so.
It's a very funny video. It's what's the title of the video?
It's called Angry Office. And can I tell you about the thought behind it? When
yeah.
before I, well, I
that's
still,
what this
that's what this
that's
is about.
What we're supposed to be doing.
I was just giving a polite integrate.
You have a blanket of consent here.
So I worked at a law. That was the law firm I worked at. That office. And my boss was before, you know, the guy who owned the, it was his law firm. He said he got into law work because he wanted to. Well, at first he wanted to be a comedy writer, and then he got into law work because that was a good like. I don't know. That was a fallback or something. But when he found my YouTube channel, I thought I was going to get fired or something. I don't know. But he said he really admired the videos. And he said, look, if you ever want to film here sometime, you know, I could leave you the keys and you could do an office thing. And I thought, what a great set piece for someone at my level at the time. I had 70,000 subscribers at that point. Mm-hmm. And so as a relatively small YouTuber at the time, it was hard to find resources, hard to find people that wanted to work with you, and hard to find locations that would let you film. So I had this big resource all of a sudden, this big office. So I wrote a whole sketch about a day in the life of an, but I didn't want it to seem like the office. I didn't mm-hmm. want it to seem like, mm-hmm. so I'm like, well, let's make these characters a little bit more disgruntled and a little bit more absurd, you know, a little grosser or whatever. I just wanted, and I thought it would be funny to have, you know, The Office had a gay character, but it didn't have like an offensively gay character. And so I thought, well, how, because it is a kind of a stereotype, you know, like of like, you know, being a minority in the office, you are sort of on some kind of invisible pedestal of some kind, even just a little bit, because you are the diverse one. You're the, and a lot of jobs I worked at, because I was the gay one, you know, I kind of saw this sort of how people, you know, if like someone's in a wheelchair, you open the door, there's an extra bit of etiquette, you know, mm-hmm. in a corporate world, especially I worked with a lot of straight white men. And so my sexuality really was on the table more than I thought it would be in that world. And I wanted to make a statement about that, like, move, I'm gay, because yes, I'm the minority, I'm on the pedestal, so get the fuck out of my way, I got copies to make. But then also people think you want to go to all their baby showers. And so, and there's another line in that video where I say, fuck off, I'm not going to, because yeah, I'm gay, I'm not going to go to your fucking baby shower. because you know, they're like, oh, come with the girls and let's hang out. So the whole video, again, speaking from, you know, writing what you know, mm-hmm. at that point in my life, I knew corporate America very well. I had worked in it for a few years at that point. So I was, or just office life, I felt like I knew very well. So yeah, my videos do reflect at any given point what I feel like. Right now I'm doing a Karen video. With you. We're mocking Karen.
We're going to be filming in my backyard. And you know, when you're contemplating this video, you texted me, you know, you wanted to make sure that you could make it satirically and not make it in a way that read as anti-feminist, because you are scrutinizing a female archetype. Right. And I thought this is a great question to be asking, and I don't know exactly how to answer it, but I think you should watch this video of Z-Way having a Karen convention. And then I think it became very clear that we can scrutinize an archetype without scrutinizing the entire gender of that archetype.
That's 100% true. And I can't remember how you worded it, but you put what you just said, I think, in even better words in the text back. You worded it somehow to where I felt totally comfortable, and I was like, oh yeah, she's right. Like I can, but I dug even further, and I've been watching a lot of Karen videos since that chat, and I realized there's just as many male Karens. So
yeah,
I no longer have the fear of like, oh, is it anti-feminist? Because I think Karen is really just a very broad label on a more of a behavior type and a sort of elitist or I'm better than you kind of a mentality. Mm-hmm. That's, you know.
It encapsulates more. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's male Karens, and maybe we haven't like seen enough actually, you know, we saw the Capitol riots. We right. saw some male Karens.
That was the Karen convention.
That was the first Karen
convention. The first
convention.
There will be, there might be more. So,
but yeah, I mean, it's one of these things. When we were talking about this the other day about satire,
yeah,
is you can't make your audience smarter than they are, and there's going to be some people out there, and this is not the people who criticize satire, but the people who don't get that it's satire. Yeah. Like there will be people out there who see Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec right. and look up to him as like the ideal, like, I should be more like Ron, when what we're actually learning about Ron, I mean, like, he's got a lot of great qualities.
Well, yeah.
But he's also kind of like a conservative asshole, you know? Right.
They're taking it as if the character type is what they're relating to, not the fact that the show is making a mockery of that character type.
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes over their head. And they see, I mean, everyone interprets the comedy differently. I mean, mm-hmm. everything is interpreted differently, but comedy especially, people are always going to have their own interpretation of which direction you're punching or which what you're making fun of. And you're right. There's a lot of people that I've met in the middle of the country or just places where it's not as acceptable to be gay. And they're convinced I'm straight and that when I play a gay character, I'm making fun of gay people. And it's mm-hmm. really more of just, no, I'm not really making fun of gay people. I'm speaking from like gay tropes that are deep down inside of me that mm-hmm. like, you know, and growing up in straight America, I'm so used to suppressing those. So when I play a gay character, it feels so liberating to just let every gay trope out of me naturally. And so, you know, take from it what you will, but like, I think a queer crowd can watch when I play these larger than life female roles or these gay characters and they see, you know,
see the commentary you're making and they know the place it's coming from and they have the shared experience and the shared context. Right. And then you can't control that there are going to be people out there who are going to see like you playing this archetype and be like, yeah, fuck those people, you know?
Right.
And that's the sad duality of comedy is it can be used for good and it can be used for bad. But I think you're using it for good.
I think comedy should be used for good. I used to do a lot of pranks back in the day. I used to do a lot of like hidden camera pranks and stuff like that. I don't do that anymore. And someone asked me, I was at the Verizon store the other day, and this is not a plug for them. You can bleep it out. I was getting my phone done. Mm-hmm. And the guy recognized me and he wanted a photograph with me. And he asked me, why don't you do pranks anymore? You should prank people. You should do a prank here in the store. And I told him, because I don't like any video where someone has to be made a fool for the video to mm-hmm. be good.
That's one of the wonderful things about you playing almost all the characters is you play these archetypes, but at the end of the day, you're just making fun of yourself.
And I like taking on the parts that I don't feel comfortable asking other actors to do. That's why I like to play multiple characters. You know, I like to take on, like, no one's going to want me to shit in their face, so I'm going to take it.
My own face. And with the power of editing, that's possible.
It's very possible.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
We kind of touched on it, but you do have a much larger straight audience than your mm-hmm. average queer, straight male audience.
Yes.
Than your average queer creator these days.
Yeah.
Certainly way more than me. Like, I don't think I have a lot of, straight bros out there watching my stuff and being like, yeah, bro. Fuck those Karens, you know?
Maybe, I don't know.
But we've talked about this in our mm-hmm. personal life. Now let's talk about it for other people to hear. You are queer. A lot of your audience assumes that you're not queer. And mm-hmm. we talked about... I love how I keep referencing conversations we've had. And we've talked about this nowhere that can be heard by anyone.
Right.
We've talked about before uh-huh. how anytime you play a gay character and it seems very true for you, the comment section will be full of straight guys asking, wait, is Brandon actually gay?
Yeah.
Like it's a thing that's shocking to them. And then there's always people who come to your defense like, why does it matter? Yes, he's gay. No, Brandon couldn't be gay. He's too funny. You know?
He's too funny to be gay. Can you believe that shit? Or people will try and defend me, try and like stick up for me by being like, no, fuck you, he's not gay. Like, well, hold on. Why is that so bad?
It's, I think it's a statement to your comedy that you can reach so many different demographics.
Can
you
I
know?
Actually, I've been wanting, it's been so long since I've been on a podcast, and I've actually been wanting to shed light on this in a setting where, you know, I never myself in my videos on really on any of my platforms. So I would love to talk about this because I grew up in a very, very straight white town. I was gay, fat, closeted, poor, brown kid in a rich, affluent, conservative white community. Mm-hmm. And it was very hard, to really just be funny authentically. You know, everyone at school was joking about the puss and the fucking, and that's all. They're joking about shit authentically. They would make jokes that were funny because they were, you know, these kids I would go to school with were joking from the heart about their own experience. I couldn't joke about, oh yeah, and I feel so pent up because I'm not allowed to express that I like guys. All right. Like, there was no outlet for me to be authentically funny. So every joke I made in high school was like something that I thought they would think was funny or something that, like, you know, I would have to try and be on their level because it was always their playing field that we were on in terms of being funny and in class. And so I kind of sort of learned how to be straight funny. I kind of learned what the, and I, for my, you know, freshman, sophomore year of high school, I was really learning, okay, this is my place in life. I am into guys, but I'm not allowed to joke about it. I'm not allowed to talk about it, but I really want to be funny. And this is how to be funny. Mm-hmm. And so by senior year, I think I was pretty affluent in bro humor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like I said, Girls Will Be Girls was my first taste, which, if you haven't seen it yet, it's now on Amazon. This is a plug, unpaid, but fucking it's a great movie.
Varla Jean Merman, Coco Peru, Jack Plotnick as Evie God. Harris. It's
so good.
It's compulsory drag queen education.
Exactly.
And it's also, it's not for the faint of heart. It's in line with John Waters. It's like, it's a little bit more drag centric than your typical John Waters movie.
Watch with your parents with caution. Caution.
And I'm saying that as if Girls Will Be Girls is a John Waters movie, but I think they exist in the same universe.
Oh, 100%. And they hit a lot of the same floral palettes of John Waters. You know what I mean? Yeah. They hit a lot of the same floral notes. And anyways, so that movie, I found it. I must have just graduated high school. I was really at a turning point in my life. I was just starting to, you know, do YouTube. I just left high school. I was just going into college, and I discovered Girls Will Be Girls. And I discovered that comedy can move at twice the rate, that queers can write, in my opinion, much more clever dialogue than, like, the stuff I was watching on TV, Two and a Half Men and bullshit like that. Like, that's that was comedy to me back then. South Park was probably the most raunchy stuff. But even then, you know, there was a lot of just to see a lot of elements being common, you know, that you could talk about all sorts of sexual things in a different light with queer comedy. And it just really attracted me to it. And so where was I going with this? Queer high school. I don't remember where I was going with this, but yeah, that got me into doing YouTube.
And, yeah. And now you have a very diverse audience, which includes a lot of
straight guys. Oh, no, that's right. So I kind of very quickly learned, okay, this is a very much more refined way of making comedy. But then my whole life I had learned this very straight way of making comedy. So I feel like my work today still consists of, you know, it's almost like I feel like I can take straight humor and package it for everyone to love. And I feel like I could take queer humor and package it for everyone. And I feel like I could combine them into something that isn't quite in existence, or at least not in abundance out there.
Also think we are entering, I've been thinking about this a lot as I've been watching old sitcoms, and just what a different world it is when it's a show written for a broad audience, when it's a show written like to meet TV guide standards, you know?
I think what the biggest help to me is watching the reaction videos. And luckily, you know, there are people who upload them reacting to, you know, and you, it's like having a focus group. You get to see what elements, what scenes make them, you know, their eyes light up. You can see what captivates them when they're scared or interested or bored or laughing or fun, you know, and I watch all the reaction videos, as many as I can, and I take them all to heart. And I put that into the next video going forward. They love that sequence, that montage. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they love when this happened. And I just do, every video is a chance to do research. Every video I upload is a chance to see what they liked and what they didn't like.
And that's what I think is like, that's why we're seeing this shift away from like network television. I mean, I think network television may be on the way out. I mean, not just because of streaming platforms, but streaming platforms and, you know, specialty cable networks. That's where it started. And now it's like streaming platforms are starting their own shows and you watch it exclusively on this platform and blah, 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 blah. And but what that equates to is more independent artists are being given chances they wouldn't have been given a while ago
and
wouldn't have been given on a network television, you know? And that's where I think a lot of our attention is now shifting to. And it's like, why I love the show Broad City. It's like written by the two performers who created it for themselves. They created it based on what they find funny. It speaks to like a niche demographic, but it's actually universal humor. And I think that's what TV stations were... They were trying to tell us, oh, we have to have a show written this way because this is the only way to let people, you know.
It's very narrow-minded. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, and then when you like kind of open it up, like let anyone create what they find funny, and you're actually going to find that a lot more people are into that than you give them credit for, you know?
Yeah, it's just the risk of, like I think no one wanted to take the risk. And YouTube was a way of forcing, was like the first way of forcing these... you know, production companies or these, you know, networks to see like, oh, like the attention can be absorbed into something that's easily accessible and more tailored to what the viewer wants to see because it's made by people who are also fans.
Yeah.
You know, Vivian Medrano, who does Hell of a Boss, you know, the brilliant, I mean, she's a brilliant showrunner. She has this, you know, she knows what to make and she knows how to cater to an audience more than most people I've ever seen or heard of. And the way she does this is that she's just such a big fan. She loves animation. She loves lore. She loves watching TV shows. And she's a legitimate fan of every person she casts in the show. So again, writing from what you know, I think that like YouTube allows for artists to create work that is representative of who they are and what they know. And that resonates stronger to the audience because they're not being written, you know, we had a very finite amount of people writing for the whole world in Hollywood at one point in time. And now everyone can write for everyone. There's a show for everyone.
And that's the other thing I was kind of thinking about is that like things are so quick to get labeled as like, oh, this is female comedy. You know, like this is our broad comedy and it's normally, you know, written by straight white men, or at least that was the norm for a very long time.
Right.
And straight white men telling everyone else what they should find funny and, you know, big money, putting money into it and worrying only about the numbers at the end of the day and not the actual content they're creating. And like, what's the easiest to just like force feed to a, a huge audience? How can we cram this cornmeal down these ducks' throats?
And I'm sure you feel like, I feel cheated. I don't know about you, but I feel like, because we had childhoods of like MTV and shit like spoon-fed to us. And I feel like I would have just, if YouTube was around as a kid, I would have dove so deep into
that. There was some good stuff. You know, there's some stuff that I'm like, you know, I'm glad I had that in my life. But I do think this like shift to letting artists create content and that's the content that we elevate rather than corporate content, you know, like a company creating. Our numbers tell us that this is the show that's going to make everyone happy. And then what you end up with is The Middle, which I watched with Patricia Heaton. But it's like, it doesn't challenge anything. It's it's just like, here you go, corn America.
Cornmeal.
The Big Bang Theory.
Oh my God.
Like, I mean, it's not that there's not funny things in these shows, but it's just also neutered and dulled down and watered down to the point where it's like, if this had a voice, it was silenced a long time
ago. It's the soft soap equivalent. Like, it's like...
And I mean, like, anyone from the Big Bang Theory out there will be like, well, thank God for it because I'm a multimillionaire now.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, they love it. They love the show. No, I'm the same way. I actually broke up with someone one time because they only watched and consumed mainstream music and media. I'm like, girl, it is what a day and age. It was like 2016 at the time. And I was like, you can watch literally anything. You could watch a fucking, I don't know. You could watch anyone getting fisted. Anyone getting fisted. Any person you could think of There's a fist in their ass in every resolution you could think of. And so I don't know.
What did I say last night? we were talking about finding noises to fall asleep to. And thanks to YouTube, you could type in anything. Oh. And if you want to fall asleep to the sound of a walrus slapping its belly with its little
for 12 hours.
For 12 hours, there's probably a loop out there. It is magical to live in a YouTube age.
Yeah,
And you're one of the lords of YouTube. Are you what button are you up to on the did you receive your plaque for the platinum button? Are you a platinum button YouTuber?
I think I just have the
I'm still in gold rank.
I'm still in fucking gold, bitch.
I got my silver button and I had to chase it down. I'm telling you.
Oh, I had to chase mine down too.
Okay, good.
They don't deliver them proudly. And I think they threw it at my house.
I was like, when I realized I should have gotten a silver button, I was like, I was a Karen on the...
Oh,
I need to speak to the manager of YouTube. Where is my silver button? I have had 100,000 subscribers for the last 2 months, and I expect the silver button to be delivered with haste. This is Karen in the Victorian era.
Yes. Well, it shows how demanding and how urgent it is. I think my silver and gold were delivered like a month apart from each other because they had waited. I didn't follow up with them for so long. And then I think it was like a year or two after I was supposed to get the silver. So they just threw them both at me. It was the CEO, Susan, in her car. She just drove by with two boxes and threw them at my house. No, I didn't hang them up for a long time because I thought it was kind of egotistical to hang up any kind of award like that. But then...
I have mine, it's holding the window open. No, I'm joking. If YouTube's listening right now, I'm thank you for my button. No, my three awards I won this year, my two queer teams.
I wasn't going to say it. I didn't know if you want me to say, but I'm like, I think those are other awards you have holding the window open.
The window is open on its own, okay? Forget that joke. The awards are just right next to the window, but it does look like they're holding their window open right now, which is probably the attitude I should have towards awards, but I still love awards.
Anyone can just walk up and take it. There is nothing. A neighbor.
There's a screen.
A fly can't steal them.
We're going to have to post a... I'll have to post a picture of
what we're talking about. I think they have an idea. There's just awards on an open window, and anyone could, if anyone knows where she lives,
just reach in and grab my queerties.
You'll win a queerty award.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so
I have my Streamy Awards on either side of my TV. So if I Netflix and chill with anyone, they have to watch it between two Streamy Awards.
They have to see. Vivian Medrano, you brought up.
Oh, what a genius. She's like 26, 27. She's like a kid.
That's the other thing.
Fuck her. She is
that's
so
successful.
The other
thing about entertainment these days is young people. I mean, I really feel like because of all the different platforms and because of independent work being elevated these days, the for us, by us work is being elevated, that now it really is about talent. It doesn't matter. There's less ageism either way. It's like, you know, even if you're young and you're just starting out, if you have the talent and you have the drive and you have something that is resonating with people,
right,
you can get it seen by the audience that's waiting for you.
Yeah.
It's like when I find something that I love, I feel like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. I'm so glad this is being created because I've always wanted this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you and Vivian both, I think, overlap in that regard, that you're both, like, everyone can look talented to some degree on social media, but as someone who knows you in real life and Vivian in real life, and I just see how you operate just on a normal, you know, afternoon, it's like the two of you are geniuses. And to see the way, no, seriously, and I think I'm fairly like, you know, very more creative than the average person. And so when I see other people who I'm like really admire, and then I see them blow up or they have this big audience, it makes me happy for them because it's like, I know that all of that is deserved. And Vivian, seeing the way that she just astronomically erupted, I was like, well, fucking, it's about time. Because, you know, you watch the end credits of Hell of a Boss.
And that's, by the way, that's what we're talking about. Vivian Medrano first created Has Been Hotel.
Yes.
And then you and her teamed up.
Which she got it. A24 got it from her Has Been. A24, yeah, and that's like a huge, and then she's working on that, but then at the same time, she's running this other massive show, Hell of a Boss, and there's like hundreds of people that work and report to her.
And you are, the two of you write the episodes.
We do, yes. So the two of us wrote, we have brought on a couple other writers, but it's pretty much, you know, Vivian and I, at least the first season was like, you know, Vivian and myself, and I'm still a writer for the show, but she handles almost every aspect of intimately, like she's very hands-on with everything, and I've seen her sketch, I've seen her draw. She is just, you know, she's like how they depicted Cruella, just this like immense natural talent that, you know, everything she touches is just turns to gold. And
these are not like, these are not little flash cartoons. These are
Disney quality animation.
You couldn't differentiate it from anything that's on television. It's so well done.
Yeah.
You can tell that it's done with passion. And then it's authentically yours and Vivian's voices. Like, I can hear Brandon Rogers in all of the writing. And, I mean, you do voice some of the characters, so it's easy to hear you in the show. But
I see what you mean. Like, tonally,
It's a play on words.
Play on words, yeah.
It's a really, I say it's like kids who grew up with Invader Zim will love Hell of a Boss, because it's a very nostalgic cartoon while also being completely new and fresh and its own thing.
And can I just say something about who also has a very strong creative input presence on this show is the one of the god of gods of voices, Richard Horvitz, who, holy shit.
Who's the voice? He's the voiceover director. I go into the studio to record my little cameos, it's Invader Zim giving me voice direction, which blows my mind up every fucking time. And then I go home and play Overwatch with Jonan Vasquez, who created Invader Zim, and I'm like, what is happening to my life?
That's manifestation.
10-year-old Jarek would have been like, what the fuck are you talking about? If I'm like, one day you shall be playing video games with...
Oh, 10-year-old Jarek would have had pants full of piss. It blows my mind, because he was like five people I grew up with, Richard, and I didn't realize that it was the same voice. I didn't realize that Richard Horvitz was Alpha 5 and Billy and from Billy and Mandy and Invader Zim, and it's like
Angry Beavers.
And I hear his voice, because he's the vocal director, which basically, for those of you who don't know, he's essentially what you would imagine as the director of the actor, like a traditional director where they say it like this, try it like this, do the thing. You know, he's the guy who's having us do the takes and giving us the feedback. And it feels like taking acting class, because he's so refined and he knows his craft so well. And you're hearing notes that someone who's been in the business for so many years through so many big projects that we all grew up with. It's just like a unique form of getting feedback for your acting that you really couldn't get anywhere else. And it's so cool. And it feels like I'm part of a really cool club that, and I also want to say every character is designed around the actor that plays them. Like, every character is tailored. They're usually written and designed before Vivian reaches out to the actor. And so it is kind of cool that, you know, seeing Blitz really teaches me what other people might see in me. You know, I see him on screen and I'm like, oh, that's my typecast.
I mean, knowing you as a person, I feel like I think lots of your characters, I wouldn't say all, because, you know, some of them are really awful, horrible people. But even those characters, I can see these little glimpses of Brandon in each character. And I can see like, oh, this must be like a manifestation of Brandon's narcissistic side. Or this must be like a manifestation of like Brandon's anxieties.
they're all authentic. I mean, a lot of them, almost, I want to say just about all the characters come from somewhere within me naturally that I relate to. And, you know, everyone has bad qualities. I don't think I have shittier qualities than most people, but I have like elements that resonate through my villain characters that I think is a, you know, and like going back to my therapist who's like, you know, just translate it into a video. I'm like, okay, so I'm feeling kind of negative this week. I'll play Bryce and she's evil, or I'll play Bobby Worst.
I'm trying to actually think who would you say is your sweetest character? Do you even have a character that doesn't have some kind of...
Dino the Filipino, who I just retired. Yes. That was my grandmother voicing him. And she's still all right, but she just can't voice him anymore. Mm-hmm. He was probably my sweetest character. Sam is a sweet one, but I think his worst quality is that he steals a lot. But he's a sweet guy. He's a klepto.
You do have some sweet characters. I was totally forgetting all about sweet Dino.
There is a sweet side to me, but I also find that it's fun to be bad, and it's fun. I think people sometimes live vicariously through the character, if it's a 3-act structure about someone and their motives, and they do bad things. It is kind of fun to have a protagonist do things that are, not good, and it's fun to do them as a character. Even when I'm in public, a lot of people will see that we're clearly making a video, and so having that camera around really lets me feel free to just be loud and wacky, because no one, if there wasn't a cameraman around, I would just look like I was insane.
Yeah.
So having the crew, the more crew that we have on a shoot, the more I feel like I can, be goofier. But yeah, they're all expressive. I mean, just like Jinx is, a way that you were talking about earlier. Oh, I'm saying it now too. We were talking earlier.
You should have been here for our last conversation.
But like you were just saying, like Jinx is like this hyper realized version of yourself, and a mix between your parents, which I thought was brilliant.
I guess she does kind of have some of my dad in me. In her, because I always think of. I always think of my mom being...
She's the wild one.
She was the first, inspiration for Jinx. Mm. But I've always thought of Jinx also as kind of a con artist. And there's where my dad comes in. My dad's not a con artist per se, but he doesn't do everything by the books. Let's leave it at that.
You sit, and I'm paraphrasing, but you define Jinx as like you said, your dad's side of the family. There's like a sophistication.
Her dad's side of the family is like your typical rich white WASP family.
Yeah, yeah.
And then her mom's side of the family is trailer park con artists.
She's
the hybrid between those two things.
I love that.
She might have been a debutante in another life, but she was too addicted to her own ambition to take that route. So
I think Jinx has very, very sassy, but very motherly qualities to her. She reminds me of a very sassy trailer park mom.
because, and it's those, I think what it is that it's like she has a fierceness to her that you only find in single mothers. Mm. I was raised by a single mom.
Same,
And she might be, she's, my mom's a character, but she's also like fiercely protective of us, you know? And I think that's just a trait mothers have, and it can get channeled into different areas too. We have Jinx. It's like she has that fierce mother energy, but she channels it into her own ambition.
her career is her child. That's
her second child. She's got Kamikaze, that little and then she's got her career.
But then she's got her career, and that honestly, I don't know if the career came after, but if it did, that's the baby.
That's the baby, and it needs more.
It needs more love.
We've got Brandon Rogers of YouTube fame. You can see Magic Funhouse on VRV. You can watch Hell of a Boss on YouTube. There's lots of ways to experience.
Get some Rogers in your consciousness.
There's plenty of ways to experience Brandon's body of work. Thank you so much for being a guest. Now I have to ask you the unrelated to your work in Genius obligatory questions.
I'll see if I can answer.
Mm-hmm. Who is your celebrity crush today?
Oh my goodness.
And I used to, I've been all over, since you're my good pal, I'll tell you, we've been all over the place with this question, because it started out as, I said, celebrity crush, and then sometimes people would say their artistic celebrity crush. But what I wanted when I asked this question originally is I wanted to know, who would you bang? But then I'm like, that's so limiting. Why am I trying to make it sexual? Not all infatuation is sex-based. So I'm now saying to listeners, I'm going back to the original the original format. Celebrity crush can be however you interpret that.
Okay, but I have to say, I've had this crush on this person for a long time. And, you know, well, well, really, it's a crush on two people equally. It's the Franco brothers, I think. I think that's what it is. But I haven't seen photos of them currently, so I don't know if either of them went off the deep end since. So my crush might have to be updated.
And you're no stranger to sleeping with siblings, so.
Going back to a conversation we had.
We were talking earlier.
Not my own siblings. Sleeping with other siblings that are siblings. Oh, God. Yeah. Slumber parties.
And they were twins.
They were twins.
And one of each...
one of each sex, yes. That was an experience. That was an experience. Yeah, sleeping with... Because it does feel like indirect incest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of each sex, but that... Now I'm... Oh, my God, let's... What? This is literally the mental gymnastics my brain was just doing. It's like, well, there's more than two sexes, and we haven't specified. We said one of each sex.
Oh,
so
one of each of the sexes that were available back in 2006.
So it's not that you slept with like octuplets.
No,
and there was.
Oh my God!
Everyone on the like gender sex spectrum. You slept with a male and female twin set of
my
siblings.
God. Can you imagine if I found octuplets that were one of each sex in 2006? Oh my God! That would have been I don't know if that's ever existed in history. No, that high school. Yeah, that was a very, very weird time. I had so many girlfriends in high school. Actually, I had five.
You feel the need to count them? Are you going to list them?
I had
three girlfriends in middle school.
And then, okay, all right. Oh, that's still a romantic time. It's good to have a partner in middle school because a lot of assholes then. It's good to have someone you can...
I fully went to a makeout party with one of my girlfriends. We made out pretty much the entire time. And then in eighth grade, I kissed my first boy and I was like, oh, never mind. I'm so gay. I think I was even identifying as bi at that time because I could no longer I could no longer
suppress fully straight. Suppress. Say that. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, two of my three girlfriends knew that I was bi. Uh-huh. And one of them found it very sexy.
Good. Oh, they should have all found it very sexy. But when I kissed a boy in high school, that was when I knew 100%. And he reached out to me recently, which is weird. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to this guy in since I was in high school with him. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, do you remember camping? And I was like, oh, that's where it happened. We were in a tent too. So it was a camping trip. I was like a sophomore.
That wasn't the only tent that night.
That wasn't the only tent.
Do you consider yourself spiritual?
I don't know. I consider myself fairly just open to whatever the reality is, but I don't know if I'll ever know what the reality fully is. So I'm not against anything. If there is a God for every parallel universe and we're all in a giant snow globe in someone's asshole, then that's what that is. And I have no problem with it. And if there's nothing out there and we die and become nothing, and you know, then that's okay too. But I do consider myself... very much vibing with or trying to generate good vibes. I feel like there is such a thing as energies and like walking into a room and bringing a good or bad energy with you. And I know that's spirituality, but it's something you can't tangibly feel or see. And I think that in a sense, kind of karma exists. And I don't know, though, some people have gotten away with some pretty bad stuff and had pretty good lives. So I don't know. But I don't know. What about you?
I practice witchcraft.
I knew that. I just was asking for them. But, and I was saying earlier, it's very, the Monsoon Manor has very witch-like qualities around it.
That's by design, yes.
There are jars of living things and and all kinds of potions.
Self-sustaining terrarium ecosystems, yeah.
The ecosystems, yes, that's so cool. And I've seen so many plants. I don't think I've ever been in a house with
that's
so many plants.
That's all Kenny. Kenny's the green witch. I'm the kitchen witch.
The kitchen witch.
I express my magic through cooking.
That's right.
And music.
I told you, the first night I was here, she was making dinner, and I was like, you look like a witch making a potion.
Well, I'm a whirlwind in the kitchen. It's a very chaotic process.
It was cool. It had Mary Poppins elements because you're like a dash of this and a little bit of this and blending this and it was just I was like, can I help? And no, just keep me company.
No, stay there. Oh yeah, my partner is always he comments on the fact that like I'm unwilling to accept help in the kitchen. Like, I really just like someone to sit there and talk to me while I do everything. But I don't, everyone's always like, how can I help? And I'm like, you can grab that dish and put it over there. And it's like,
which, trust me, I don't fight, but I've never met anyone like that. Everyone's like, you can chop that.
I mean, sometimes the thing is that I micromanage and I never want to irritate someone by micromanaging them in the kitchen. Sometimes it will delegate chopping, especially for like Thanksgiving. There's multiple chopping stations. And I put everyone to work at least prepping things. And my brother has insisted to be on helping me prep stuff, and he works in a kitchen. He's a chef.
Oh, okay.
So like,
can't really argue with
he
him.
Lets me do the cooking, but he'll oftentimes come in and tell me what I'm doing wrong and prep some vegetables and stuff. But he still lets me steer this ship at the end of the day.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I can be instructed how to cook, but I'm not a good chef on my own. I think I told you the other night, I can't stomach eating most of the stuff I make.
Yeah, you give up halfway through.
I'll try.
And then you
told
me you've just been eating just chicken and hot sauce.
Yeah, sometimes I'll have just cheese and hot sauce. That's in Hell of a Boss, the fifth episode. The Blitz, you see him eating cheese and sriracha sauce because I was eating that one time with Vivian and she thought that was weird, and so she made. Well, it's good. It's not my fault. It's good.
Do you eat it in a bowl with a spoon like that?
Not with
or do
a spoon.
You take a cube of cheese and dip it? Yeah,
or I'll squirt right on the cube each time.
Okay.
Or on the best is a Swiss cheese, the one with the holes in it, and
you fill the holes with.
And, or I just like sriracha. Squirt it on like a I don't know what's that, like a cummed butt cheek.
a cummed
on butt cheek, a cheek of ass that would cum on it.
My final question is, what is your what is your go-to karaoke song?
It's everyone's though, but I really do love this song a lot before I realized it was such a trendy karaoke song. Can you guess already?
No, what is it?
It's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, it shouldn't be everyone's go-to song.
I love it so much. That song was like the first, because you know, when I was a kid, all the Disney ballads were pretty much sung by women. And I heard that song and it struck me like a Disney ballad, but it was sung by a very...
It goes in so many, like it tells a full story. The emotion changes multiple times throughout the song. I only say it shouldn't be everyone's karaoke song because it's very... oh my God, I'm saying this and I'm realizing what a hypocrite I am. I was gonna say it's like a very like meaningful song to me, and then I just remember this time in some city in England, drunk off my ass, singing Bohemian Rhapsody, like just garbling into the microphone.
You were butchering Rhapsody.
I was the drunk asshole butchering. That was,
and you're just saying you don't like.
And I'm like, I don't like when people do that.
No, you were that person.
It's and that's
you were her.
That was one of the moments I was like, Mama, maybe you've drank enough for your lifetime.
You know, that's the one song I never butcher. I have butchered songs. I've butchered I Like Big Butts, and you know where that comes from? That comes from that side of me. Saying when I was trying to be straight and I started forgetting the words to it one time at karaoke, and I was like, oh shit, I'm forgetting the words, but on the positive side, oh shit, I'm giving into my true self and forgetting this song. And then I shift more to Bohemian Rhapsody because he was the first Disney princess I had a crush on, was Freddie Mercury. He really was. I love that, man.
I didn't discover Freddie Mercury and Queen until middle school, and it was all of my Mormon friends turning me on to Queen. They were obsessed with Queen and the Rocky Horror soundtrack. They were very liberal Mormons.
I was going to say, those were some flexible Mormons.
It was funny because they were Mormons, but like they were also my kind of, they were my weirdo misfit friends who were into Rocky Horror Show and stuff, and not what you'd expect from Mormons. And they were thoroughly Mormons. Yeah. They were also thoroughly Rocky Horror fans. And that's not a mashup you expect.
It's not a mashup you expect. I had a lot of Mormon friends in high school, and they were very fun to be around. And I think I'm a good judge of if someone's fun to be around or not. And they were, and I remember they were pretty liberal with some stuff. There were some SNL sketches that we had to fast forward past, and we were doing sleepovers. But no, I think they get a bad rap.
And I mean, and at the end of the day, all religion is a cult. So
yeah, you know, that's why I'm fairly, is it agnostic? Is that where you like kind of like, oh, whatever is whatever? Like you kind of not really, not atheist.
Atheist is the belief in that there is nothing.
Yeah.
But agnostic is kind of like, I haven't seen any proof of anything yet. So I'm still.
That's what that's why I say energies. Like I feel like I've seen proof of energies. Like I can feel an energy off someone when they walk in the room, and maybe that's placebo effect or, you know, whatever. But I guess I am agnostic. Like, but I'm not in denial of anything. You know what I mean? Like I don't approach anything with total skepticism unless I know for a fact it's impossible, which I mean, even that would, you know, that's hard to tell. You know? So, yeah. I like to keep things with an open mind because it makes every experience so much more fun. Because it could be. I don't know.
Well, with that life lesson and that wisdom you imparted, we shall draw to a close. Where can people find you on the social medias?
Oh, as we said, just any search hole. Just go on the internet, any search bar, Brandon Rogers, wherever. If you're an Instagram person,
Spelt
like Brandon Rogers, the Mr. Rogers way, aka the right way. I don't do none of that D in the last name bullshit. And whatever. Because I never want to tell people where. Because if someone's a TikTok person, then they should look me up on TikTok. If someone's a YouTube person, I love YouTube is the stuff I put the most effort into. If you want something like that, but I don't know. Just
find a search hole and fill it with Brandon Rogers.
Fill it. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure being here.
Thank you
here.
So much for you came here as my house guest, and then I put you to work.
This was fun, and you did my makeup yesterday.
Yeah, that's available on my Patreon.
and it's been fun. And you cooked dinner when I got here, and you've been such a great hospice for me.
I've been such a great
hospice mistress.
hospice mistress, nurse Ratchet. Thanks so much for listening to Hijinks here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday, so make sure to search for Hijinks on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx on Instagram or at Jinx Monsoon everywhere else, and I'll see you next Wednesday for some more Hijinks.
Forever Dog.
To listen to Hijinks ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social, and rate and review Hijinks 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hijinks is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.